Welcome to Power Play, on a day when an expanding investigation into that Manchester bombing included a Canadian connection. And we have go to the NATO summit where Prime Minister Justin Trudeau stared down Donald Trump's demand for more military funding. We'll have reports from our correspondents on the scene of both of these developments. Also coming up, there could be a pipeline of trouble confronting the Trudeau government after the British Columbia election result was officially finalized. We will analyze the consequences of what could be a minority NDP government with the Green Party calling the shots. And 4 years after the Ethics Commissioner launched its investigation, Mary Dawson has ruled that former Harper Chief of Staff broke the rules in bailing out Senator Mike Duffy from his indebtedness. Our journalists weigh in on that. And his name is on the Conservative ballot, but he doesn't want to win the leadership. We'll get a convention-eve analysis from former leadership aspirant Kevin O'Leary. But first, the NATO summit's first day is ending, and aside from shoving the Prime Minister of Montenegro to get a better spot in the official NATO photo, the President followed a predictable script. CTV Ottawa Bureau Chief Joyce Napier is on the Prime Minister's tour and sent us this report from Brussels.
U.S. President Donald Trump arrived at NATO headquarters in Brussels, his first international gathering since he took office, 4 days after a suicide bomber struck one more European city. Security, counterterrorism, and the gathering and sharing of intelligence have taken over the agenda as the leaders meet, many of them for the first time.
It is our solidarity that keeps our nations safe.
At a ceremony unveiling 9/11 memorials, the new U.S. president, by far the largest contributor to NATO, had a clear message to the other 27 allies. You must share the burden of NATO military operations soon, or else.
If NATO countries made their full and complete contributions, then NATO would be even stronger than it is today, especially from the threat of terrorism.
In the last year alone, American military spending was larger than that of the 27 other countries combined. Canada is one of those countries whose military spending falls short of the target set by NATO. But Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, who arrived in the Belgian capital late last night, says Canada has always done its share.
Canada is always there as a reliable partner on NATO operations.
Ottawa is leading the mission to Latvia and is sending 450 troops there in June. But what the U.S. is demanding at this meeting is that countries increase military spending considerably. Many of the countries gathered here today have been the target of terrorist attacks, soft targets, innocent civilians. This is an issue that unites NATO allies, but money seems to be what can divide them. Joyce Napier, CTV News, Brussels.
All right, thanks, Joyce. We have reports coming out that Canada will host next year's G7 meeting in the Charlevoix region in Quebec. Justin Trudeau is expected to make that announcement later in this G7 summit that begins tomorrow in Sicily. That would be about the sixth time Canada has hosted those meetings. The last time was that infamous Muskoka meeting in Ontario in 2010. All right, let's get to Manchester now, where 4 days after the arena bombing, which killed 22, there have now been 8 arrests, and there's a widening probe looking at rounding up what clearly appears to be a terrorist network. Meanwhile, tensions are rising as bombing intelligence from Britain has been shared with the U.S. and it's suddenly ending up in American newspapers. CTV's Peter Ackman joins us from Manchester. All right, Peter, tell us about this investigating probe. Man, this is getting big in a hurry, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. This net is getting wider every day. There have been raids, controlled explosions as police officers are going into homes throughout the greater Manchester area. They are looking to break up this cell that they've said is not just this one man acting alone, that he had a lot of support. They are looking for the bomb maker. They are looking for parts. They're looking for information that on how they built this bomb. And so they are sweeping through this area. They are working with Libyan security forces as well, who have arrested the suicide bomber's father and brother. They're also providing information, talking about the last moments before he blew himself up and how he called his mother to beg for forgiveness.
My goodness. There is a tenuous Canadian connection, at least that's being reported. What can you tell us about that?
Well, that's right. There are reports now in out of Canada that the suicide bomber had links to fanatical person there in Ottawa, but really there's been links right across the world. We're hearing that he traveled to Istanbul and then to Dusseldorf in Germany, where he was in has been known as an extremist enclave. And he'd been there, they don't know exactly how long. And then he traveled back to Libya. Again, he sort of fell off the radar on how long he was there. French security forces talking about links to Syria, that he had gone into that country and then come out again. Of course, UK security saying that he was not high on their list, that he was not being watched. And so he was allowed that free movement. And so they are digging into his past, all of his steps, all of his contacts, the people that he has come into contact with, to try and understand where he was radicalized and where he got all of his expertise in this bomb making.
Peter, there's all this talk of leaks. The New York Times and other papers are getting some pretty interesting insights that are supposed to be kept under wraps. What can you tell us about how they're getting them and who's pointing the finger of blame at who?
Well, they're getting them from the American administration, and the British government is pointing the finger squarely at the United States, saying for most of today that they won't be sharing information about this investigation, because really it's put them under a clock. They had some time, they say, to work out some of the connections. They had the name of the suicide bomber, they had the area in which he was from and all of his background, and then his name came out in the American media, and all of a sudden that was out there, so they were behind the eight ball there. After that, then the next leak came, and that leak came with the detonation device and the different specifics about the investigation. Photos from the crime scene, again, leaked by the American administration. Prime Minister Theresa May saying can't happen, it won't happen, and did cut off communication initially, but that we are hearing now has been restored with the promise from Donald Trump that he will get to the bottom of it and not allow these leaks to continue.
All right, finally, you're standing in front of what looks like an amazing site there. Can you tell us what's happening there as this vigil takes on huge dimensions?
Absolutely. Over the last 3 days, we've talked, and this vigil has grown. It started just a few flowers around the base of a statue here at St. Anne's Square, and now it's grown to thousands and thousands of bouquets and balloons and handwritten notes, and there are candles, and people have been coming throughout the day, and it really changes in atmosphere depending on who's here and what's going on. We had a motorcycle group arrive earlier today with hundreds and hundreds of motorcycles and mopeds that were revving their engines as one of the family of one of the victims came to pay their respects. They were part of this group. And then we had a singer singing Amazing Grace, and this place went completely quiet as they listened in. Other times there's clapping and hugging and cheering. I mean, it's pretty much the center of the city, the center of the rehabilitation, Manchester coming together.
All right, Peter Ackman, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. All right, back to Canadian politics now. There's been a political earthquake of sorts on the West Coast as recounts ended with a minority 43-seat Liberal government under Premier Christy Clark. But there's a lot of uncertainty in the mix as the 41-seat NDP and the 3-seat Greens muse about getting together and forming their own majority coalition. Let's sort out the possibilities and the fallout with Michael Prince. He's a professor of social policy at the University of Victoria, and he's in Victoria. Professor, I got to ask you, what is the most likely end result of this very, very curious election result? Who's going to be holding power in another couple of months?
Well, Christy Clark will probably be holding the power, Don, for at least the next 3, 4, 5 months. She will be asked by the lieutenant governor to form a cabinet. They'll resume the legislature by probably early September at the latest. We need a new budget to be passed. The one in February wasn't passed before the election. And that'll be the first opportunity for the two opposition parties, who probably by then will have announced some sort of formal agreement, probably not a coalition, but certainly an alliance or partnership. And whether it's the speech from the throne in September or the budget in the fall, that'll be the opportunity for a motion of confidence or non-confidence against the Liberal minority government. I expect that will pass in the BC Liberals will fall and we'll see a change in government sometime this fall.
Could you see a change in government, or might the Lieutenant Governor just say, oh, let's go back to the people, we'll have another election? How long do you go from an election before it becomes too quick to call another one and you have to give another group the chance to run?
Well, that's not written down, as you know, in our parliamentary system, whether provincially or federally. That's a political judgment. The thinking here is, though, Don, that if there was a fall or defeat of the government sometime this fall, it'd be very likely for the Lieutenant Governor to ask the leader of the opposition, only two seats behind. In terms of popular vote, it's virtually a tie there as well. Both parties got 40% of the popular vote. There's only about